Thank you for downloading this episode of our podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast for Solomon Staircase Masonic Lodge number 357, where we talk about all things related with Freemasonry, including Hermetic teachings, philosophy, reason, spirituality, and much more. We're located in Buena Park, Southern California. Tune in as we continue to update our podcast with informative talks and articles for Masons worldwide and those who would like to inquire within.
Welcome to the final episode for the year 2023. So it's interesting, this one started with me just looking through some of my notes and some of the various documents I have, and I found an article on the rite of discalculation that was from the Scottish Rite Reporter, and I went through and read it, and I recorded it, but then as I kind of reread it, I realized there was some kind of conflicting information in it. And so as I did a little more research on the internet, I found a few different articles which I think better explained it. So in this episode, you're going to hear three different articles. You're going to hear a lot of similarity, and you're going to hear some of the same verbiage between the three. But it just goes to show that, you know, there's slightly different variations on how to look at some things. But one of the biggest things I got out of it was, you know, I wasn't aware of the meaning behind it. I mean, the rite of discalculation, as you'll learn if you don't know already, is the plucking off of one shoe. We hear about that in the first degree lecture, but it is very briefly explained. But as you move through the degrees and as you listen to some of these articles, it became to me much more awe-inspiring as to the reasons for why we do this. So I don't want to steal from any of the articles, but I want to thank everybody for listening. This is season 5, so this is the 5th year we've been doing this, and I have got a ton of stuff queued up for next year, and I plan on working on that today. I'm actually recording this podcast today on December 31st, so as always, thank you for listening, and hey, Happy New Year! The following article is from the website sacredtext.com, and there's a link in the show notes. The Rite of Discalciation. The rite of discalciation, or uncovering the feet on approaching holy ground, is derived from the Latin word discalciare, which actually is probably pronounced discalciare, to pluck off one's shoes. The usage has the prestige of antiquity and universality in its favor. That is not only very generally prevailed, but that its symbolic signification was well understood in the days of Moses. We learn that from that passage of Exodus where the angel of the Lord at the burning bush exclaims to the patriarch, "Draw not nigh hither, put off thy shoes from thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground." Clark thinks it is from this command that the Eastern nations have derived the custom of performing all their acts of religious worship with bare feet. But it is much more probable that the ceremony was in use long anterior to the circumstance of the burning bush, and that the Jewish lawgiver at once recognized it as a well-known sign of reverence. Bishop Patrick entertains this opinion and thinks that the custom was derived from the ancient patriarchs and was transmitted by a general tradition to succeeding times. Abundant evidence might be furnished from ancient authors of the existence of the custom among all nations, both Jewish and Gentile. A few of them, principally collected by Dr. Meade, must be curious and interesting. The direction of Pythagoras to his disciples was in these words: "Offer sacrifice and worship with thy shoes off." Justin Martyr says that those who came to worship in the sanctuaries and temples of the Gentiles were commanded by the priests to put off their shoes. Drusius, in his notes on the Book of Joshua, says that among most of the Eastern nations it was a pious duty to tread the pavement of the temple with unshod feet. Maimonides, the great expounder of the Jewish law, asserts that it was not lawful for a man to come into the mountain of God's house with his shoes on his feet, or with his staff, or in his working garments, or with dust on his feet. Rabbi Solomon, commenting on the command in Leviticus 19:30, "Ye shall reverence my sanctuary," makes the same remark in relation to this custom. On this subject, Dr. Oliver observes, "Now the act of going with naked feet was always considered a token of humility and reverence, and the priest in the temple worship always officiated with feet uncovered, although it was frequently injurious to their health. Mead quotes Zego Zaba, an Ethiopian bishop who was ambassador from David, king of Abyssinia, to John III of Portugal, as saying, "We are not permitted to enter the church except barefooted." The Mohammedans, when about to perform their devotions, always leave their slippers at the door of the mosque. The Druids practiced the same custom whenever they celebrated their sacred rites, and the ancient Peruvians are said to have always left their shoes at the porch when they entered the magnificent temple consecrated to the worship of the sun. Adam Clark thinks that the custom of worshiping the deity barefooted was so general among all nations of antiquity that he assigns it as one of his 13 proofs that the whole human race have been derived from one family. A theory might be advanced as follows. The shoes or sandals were worn on ordinary occasions as a protection from the defilement of the ground. To continue to wear them in a consecrated place would be a tacit insinuation that the ground there was equally polluted and capable of producing defilement. But as the very character of a holy and consecrated spot precludes the idea of any sort of defilement or impurity, the acknowledgement that such was the case was conveyed symbolically by divesting the feet of all that protection from pollution and uncleanness which would be necessary in unconsecrated places. So in modern times, we uncover the head to express the sentiment of esteem and respect. Now, in former days, when there was more violence to be apprehended than now, the casque or helmet afforded an ample protection from any sudden blow of an unexpected adversary. But we can fear no violence from one whom we esteem and respect, and therefore, to deprive the head of its accustomed protection is to give an evidence of our unlimited confidence in the person to whom the gesture is made. The rite of discalciation is, therefore, a symbol of reverence. It signifies, in the language of symbolism, that the spot which is about to be approached in this humble and reverential manner is consecrated to some holy purpose. Now, as to all that has been said, the intelligent Mason will at once see its application to the third degree. Of all the degrees of Masonry, this is by far the most important and sublime. The solemn lessons which it teaches, the sacred scene which it represents, and the impressive ceremonies with which it is conducted are all calculated to inspire the mind with feelings of awe and reverence. Into the Holy of Holies of the Temple, when the Ark of the Covenant had been deposited in its appropriate place, and the Shekinah was hovering over it, the high priest alone, and on one day only in the whole year, was permitted, after the most careful purification, to enter with bare feet, and to pronounce with fearful veneration the Tetragrammaton, or Omnific Word. And into the Master Mason's Lodge, this Holy of Holies of the Masonic Temple, where the solemn truths of death and immortality are inculcated, the aspirant, on entering, should purify his heart from every contamination, and remember with a due sense of their symbolic application those words that once broke upon the astonished ears of the old patriarch, "Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground." The following article is from the website MasonicSites.org and is also on the rite of discalciation. In the Great Light of Masonry, in the Book of Ruth, there is a passage that refers to the rite of discalciation, the plucking off of one shoe. Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things a man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. Ruth 4:7, King James Version. There is much to be learned about all of the symbolism of the rite of discalciation, and not all of it has to do with Masonry. For many years, not so long ago, almost every wedding party leaving the church had tin cans and shoes trailing behind the car with the bride and groom in it. There is some symbolism in having the shoes tied to the back of the car. There was an ancient custom of throwing a shoe after the bride in the wedding. This symbolized the renunciation of control over her by her parents and the transferring of that control to the groom. In the Great Light of Masonry, some of the symbolism of taking off one's shoe and giving it to another was a renunciation of rights or the transferring of rights. It's interesting that when a shoe was given to bind a bargain or to renounce a right, each party to the agreement kept one shoe, because the possession of one shoe by each person was evidence of the transaction. Much of the symbolism of discalciation also has to do with Masonry as well. For instance, to the candidate, the absent shoe in the first 2 degrees denotes that he is forming new ties and taking upon himself new obligations. In the process, he is casting off all degrading ties of the past and he is to climb the heights of intellectual and moral achievements and cultivate the tenets of brotherly love, relief, and truth. The symbolism to the candidate is that rights are being transferred to him and that mutual obligations are being assumed. Among Masons, the use of this ceremony indicates much symbolism. In one instance, it is symbolic of the initiate agreeing to surrender his own will and all that relates to the order and become obedient to its ancient laws. And in another sense, the symbolism is of the candidate's truthful testimony to the brethren of the lodge. In addition, the plucking off of one's shoe Masonically symbolizes sincerity of intentions in entering on an important work. It is a sign of consecration to that work and of persevering effort to complete it. The use of shoes from the first use was and is to protect the feet from the ground being traveled over and from the extreme heat and cold experienced in most climates. In the third degree, when both shoes are removed, the symbolism has to do when approaching a sacred place, the shoes are removed to avoid contaminating holy ground. A good explanation of this is given in the Masonic Concordance of the Holy Bible. Since washing was a symbol of purification and consecration, a worshiper, before taking part in a sacred ceremony, must either take off his ordinary garments, wash himself, the rite of lustration, and put on clean clothes, or wash both his garments and himself. Shoes, however, could not be washed and must be removed. Masonically, the symbolism of being without shoes in the third degree is as approaching a consecrated place and devotion to a holy purpose. By Ed Halpau, Grand Lodge Education Officer, Minnesota. Extracted from the Southern California Research Lodge Bulletin, February 2005. The following is from MasonicWorld.com and is a reprint of a short talk bulletin titled The Rite of Discalciation. And this short talk bulletin is volume 11, April 1933, number 4. Yes, that was 1933. The author is unknown. A candidate for initiation into a Masonic lodge often finds odd those requirements which he must fulfill in order to do as have all good brothers and fellows who have gone this way before. Indeed, that preparation often remains a puzzle to him, since the ritualistic explanation is only partial. Not only does the newly made brother, bewildered by the new world into which he is thrust, investigate further to ascertain if all was told him which might have been, to learn a still further meaning to the ceremony and symbol which the passage in Ruth purports to make plain. Those who read the fourth chapter of the immortal book of Ruth will note especially the seventh and eighth verses. Now this was the manner in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing. For to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. Now, therefore, the kinsman said unto Boaz, Buy it for thee, so he drew off his shoe. Redeeming here means the taking back or recovery of land or property pledged for a debt. Changing refers to the transfer of ownership. As both were then, as now, matters of importance, it is evident that the plucking off of the shoe as a pledge of honor and fair dealing was of equal importance, comparable with our swearing to our signatures to documents before a notary public. Note that to confirm all things a man plucked off his shoe, not his shoes, plural. Taking off one and handing it to him with whom a covenant was made was a symbol of sincerity. Removing both shoes signified quite another thought. These are separate and distinct symbols. In Freemasonry both are used, and it is wise to distinguish between the two, not to miss the beautiful implications of entering that place which is holy with both feet bare. The rite of discalciation, from the Latin discalciatus, meaning unshod, is worldwide. Freemasonry's ritual of the entered apprentice degree refers to the passage in Ruth. In the master's degree, the reference is not verbal, but an act which differs in meaning from that in the first degree. In all probability, Freemasonry takes this symbol from other sources than the Old Testament. Obviously, any system of teaching which is the result of that coming together of a thousand faiths, philosophies, rites, religions, guilds, and associations must have received so common a symbol from more than one source, although the Great Light does contain it. In the Old Testament, there are several passages which make removal of shoes quite a different gesture than that described in the passage from Ruth. Exodus 3:5 states, Draw nigh hither, put off thy shoes off thy feet, For the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. In Joshua 5:15 we find, And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, Loose thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy. Ecclesiastes 5:1 reads, Keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God. The association of the removal of footwear when treading holy ground is a fairly obvious symbol. Sandals or other foot gear were used to protect not the ground, but the feet, both from injury and from filth. To wear such protections in holy places, by inference, stated that the holy place was harmful to feet or was dirty. It is similar in thought content to the worldwide custom of men removing the hat in church. The knight removed his helmet in the presence of those he did not fear. He was safe in church. The removal of his protection against a blow was his acknowledgement that in a sanctuary not even an enemy would assail him. We know the custom was widespread, not confined to Israel, from many sources. Thus Pythagoras instructed his disciples to offer sacrifices with thy shoes off. In all the Eastern religious edifices, the worshipper removes his shoes in order not to defile the temple with that which touches the profane earth. Maimonides, expounder of ancient Jewish law, says, It was not lawful for a man to come into the mountain of God's home with his shoes on his feet, or with his staff, or in his working garments, or with dust on his feet. The custom was found in Ethiopia, ancient Peru, the England of the Druids. Adam Clark thought the custom so general in the nations of antiquity that he quoted it as one of the 13 proofs that the whole human race descended from one family. The rite of discalciation becomes the more beautiful as we progress through the degrees. At first, it is only a voluntary testimony of sincere and truthful intentions. Later, it is an act of humility, signifying that he who removes his shoes knows that he enters that which must not be defiled by anything unworthy. The word humility must be strictly construed that it be not confused with its derivative, humiliation. He who is humble but acknowledges supremacy in another, or the greatness of a power or principle, he is humiliated, is made to feel unworthy, not in reverence to that which is greater than he, but for the personal aggrandizement of the humiliator. A man removes his hat upon entering a home, in the presence of women, or in a church, not as a symbol of humility, but of reverence. The worshipper removes his shoes on entering a holy place for the same reason. He who walks neither barefoot nor shod offers mute testimony, even though, as yet uninstructed, he knows it not, that he is sincere. Who walks with both feet bare signifies that he treads upon that which is hallowed. Freemasonry does not stress in words this meaning of the rite of discalciation for very good reasons. Throughout our system, the explanation of our rites concerns always the simplest aspect. The fathers of our ritual were far too wise in the ways of the hearts of men to teach the abstruse first and go then to the east. Rather did they begin with that which is elementary. Then, very often, our ritual leaves the initiate to search further for himself, if he will. It is Freemasonry's recognition that man values most that for which he has to labor. But it is the less stressed meaning of the rite which is of the greater importance. He is the better Freemason and the happier who digs for himself in the rubbish of the temple to uncover that which is gloriously buried there. Is proof necessary that behind the tiled door of any open lodge is a holy place? Here it is. Freemasons teach that the great light is dedicated to God as the inestimable gift of God to men for the rule and guide of his faith. In the Great Light we read, Matthew 18:20, For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. Every Masonic lodge is opened and closed in the name of God. According to his promise, therefore, no lodge meets without the great architect being in the midst of them. Consequently, the lodge is holy ground. This being so, it may well be asked why all Freemasons do not remove their shoes when entering lodge. Once a Freemason, always a Freemason. No lodge member is required to repeat the obligations he once assumed, on every occasion at which he is present when a degree is being conferred. But it is well understood that the obligation is binding upon him for life. Every time he follows the old words in his mind, he re-obligates himself. Whenever he sees a candidate initiated, consciously or unconsciously, he himself is again initiated. Having once been taught that a candidate is prepared in a certain way because of a certain meaning in that preparation, it is unnecessary to inconvenience him every time he comes to lodge. If he is again so prepared in his heart, he fulfills all the outward requirements. While the promise and the fulfillment makes the lodge holy ground, it is kept holy only if those who form it and conduct it so revere it. Stonemasons erect a temple to God, ministers dedicate it, and worshippers consecrate it. But a desecrating hand, as in war, may unroof it, use it as a stables, or make of it a shambles. Mackey beautifully put the thought of the consecration holiness of a lodge. The rite of discalciation is a symbol of reverence. It signifies, in the language of symbolism, that the spot which is about to be approached in this humble and reverential manner is consecrated to some holy purpose. Of all the degrees of Freemasonry, the third degree is the most important and sublime. The solemn lessons which it teaches, the sacred scene which it represents, and the impressive ceremonies with which it is conducted are all calculated to inspire the mind with feelings of awe and reverence. Into the Holy of Holies of the temple, when the Ark of the Covenant has been deposited in its appropriate place, and the Shekinah was hovering over it, the high priest alone, and on one day only in the whole year, was permitted, after the most careful purification, to enter with bare feet, and to pronounce with fearful veneration the Tetragrammaton, or Omnific Word. And into the Master Mason's Lodge, this Holy of Holies of the Masonic Temple, where the solemn truths of death and immortality are inculcated, the aspirant on entering should purify his heart from every contamination and remember, with a due sense of their symbolic application, those words that once broke upon the astonished ears of the old patriarch, "Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground." Holiness is not a thing but an idea. So far as we know, the beasts of the field reverence no places as holy, for they have no consciousness of God. The sacred words of the great light are holy to us for what they teach and mean, because of whence they came. The paper, the leather, and the ink which form a Bible are no more holy than the same materials formed into a telephone directory. The stones of which a church is built, the wood from which the pulpit is carved, the metal from which the cross is made, are only the familiar stones, trees, and minerals used by men for 1,000 purposes. The cotton and the dye which form the stars and stripes are but the fruit of plants. Book, temple, and flag are holy to us because of our reverence for the ideas for which they stand. They are holy to us because we make them holy, keep them holy, think of them as holy, and cherish them as holy. So must it be with our lodges. What is a lodge? A certain number of brethren, a charter or warrant, the three great lights, and an underlying idea, a faith, a belief, a mystic tie never seen of men but the stronger for its intangibility. To many, the lodge is the room in the temple in which the brethren meet. Walls of stone or wood or plaster, floor of carpet or linoleum, some seats, an altar, and yet, by common consent of all who believe in the power of the Spirit which consecrates when a lodge is formed, holy because of what it means. The worshipper in eastern lands removes his shoes before he enters his temple as a symbol that he knows his flesh needs no protection from that which it will touch, a symbol that he brings not within its precincts any filth which might defile it. The Master Mason, symbolically removing his shoes before entering his lodge, knows that here he will find that holiness which is in the promise of God unto David, the holiness of the book on the altar, the very presence of the great architect, through whom the lodge receives the greatest of his blessing to man, friendship. But also does he symbolically remove his shoes that he may carry nothing of mineral or metallic nature, earth is mineral, into the lodge to defile it. Men can, and some do, defile their lodges. He who brings within evil or contentious thoughts of his brethren defiles it. In more than one jurisdiction in the world, the brethren are asked at every meeting if there be any not at peace with their brethren. If such there are, they are required to retire and return not until their differences are reconciled, literally carrying out the instructions. Therefore, if thou brings any gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come offer thy gift. Matthew 5:23-24. The Mason who comes to lodge to get something from it, rather than to give something to it, may defile it by that selfish attitude. Men get from Freemasonry by giving. He who brings pride of place and power to his lodge, and serves only for the empty honor of title or jewel, defiles that which is holy as surely as did those money changers from whom the great teacher drove from the temple. He who assumes to work in his lodge, but labors carelessly in a slovenly manner to the desecration of ceremonies ancient, when his ancestors were not yet born, defiles his lodge by his tacit assumptions that his convenience is of greater importance than the teachings of Freemasonry. Alas, that so many symbolically wear shoes in the holy place by the simple process of thinking little of it, attending it seldom, regarding it but as a club or association of men who meet together to pass the time away. Such brethren may indeed have been entered, passed, and raised, but uninspired, uninterested, and unhelped, they leave, seldom or never to return. To such as these, the lodge cannot be holy. Therefore, charitable thought would argue that their failures cannot defile. Luckily for us all, the majority of Freemasons who are constant attendants at lodge, the brethren who do the work, carry the load, attend to the charity, form the committees, put on the degrees, go on foot and out of their way to help, aid, and assist the brethren, in other words, who work for and are content with Master Mason's wage. These do keep the lodge holy. These do think of the three great lights upon the altar as the sanctum sanctorum. These do indeed put off their shoes from their feet, in humble and thankful knowledge that the place in which they stand is holy ground.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a comment. We enjoy hearing from our listeners. If you really like what you heard, share this podcast with your friends and lodge members. Visit us online at SolomonStaircase.org.